Rapper Killer Mike started out as Michael Render from Southwest Atlanta's Adamsville neighborhood. Even as a hip-hop artist, his lyrics often talk about social injustice.
I guess that's the privilege of policing for some profit. But thanks to Reaganomics, prison turned to profits. Cause free labor's the cornerstone of U.S. economics. Cause slavery was abolished unless you are in prison. You think I am bullish and then read the 13th Amendment. And voluntary servitude and slavery it prohibits. That's why they give in trouble.
Lately, Killer Mike has become a familiar face on the campaign trail in support of Senator Bernie Sanders for president.
When it comes to your children dying in the streets, I know that the only person that I have the conscience to vote for is Bernard Sanders. I know that the only person that my logical, beautiful black mind will allow me to vote for is Senator Bernie Sanders.
And Killer Mike joins me this morning. Keeping in mind what you've said, that Bernie Sanders is the only person you feel a conscience to vote for.
For me, yeah.
What if he doesn't get the nomination?
Well, that's something, you know, I got asked that on another station. I said, well, the first thing I'll do is call the senator and say, what are we doing now? You know, it's the truth of it.
So you're going to stay working in some capacity with him?
Yeah, if I can. I mean, I've become friends with him, so I don't intend to unknow him after this. I guess some entertainers that Hillary had ties to, they got paid for concerts or whatever else. Like, the only thing I've ever been paid for is a hotel room, because I'm not going to fly to talk good about you and pay for my own hotel. So I didn't do any of this for money or more fame or anything. I did it because my conscience said this is the right thing to do on the behalf of working class people in this country. So afterwards, yeah, I definitely intend to still know Senator Sanders and take some trips up to Washington or Vermont, wherever he lands. And, you know, I want to land in the White House, but if that shouldn't happen, then I'll faithfully follow him into wherever the revolution takes him, because I really believe in the things he's talking about.
And I wonder if you think it's going to change things, even if he doesn't. I want to play this clip after the grand jury decided not to indict the Missouri police officer who killed 18-year-old Michael Brown. You were in St. Louis at that time. You were about to perform, and you said this.
I have a 20-year-old son, and I have a 12-year-old son, and I'm so afraid for them. When I stood in front of my wife, and I hugged her, and I cried like a baby, I said, these motherfuckers got me today. But with that said, you motherfuckers will not own tomorrow. We will not live in your fear. We will not accept your pain. Because we know you don't value my skin.
So, I mean, it seems incongruous to some people that somebody that passionate about racial issues and so personally connected is allied with a 74-year-old white Jewish independent.
From Vermont.
Yeah.
It only feels like that because the narrative we've been told always separates us. The narrative we've been told separates men from women, separates black from white, separates Latino from American, and it separates. I have to speak in terms of race because I belong to a group of people that are critically in danger in the immediate. I'm an African-American man. I'm African-American father. I'm African-American husband. So it is easier for police encounters to go bad. It is easier for places like the Atlanta Public School System to fall into just a hole of drudgery. It is easier for these things to happen. I don't know why they're easier. I don't know why these things have been allowed, but I have to approach things from that perspective that way. But I am first and foremost always thinking about the worker class. And that's globally. It's not only race. Race is a system of class in this country. But when I go to other countries, there's still a class system, even if there isn't a difference in skin color. And ultimately, that's what I'm fighting. It just happens in this country, our class system, to some degree, is based on race. But I want to see this 74-year-old Jewish white guy in office because his policy affects my class, worker class, and black people in a positive way. And I think for all Americans, basic health care, maternity leave, the ability to matriculate your education past 12th grade and contribute to society is more than just a day laborer or someone looking for a job. You know, the poor kids get an opportunity to get specialized trades or skills like coding. Makes sense to me, no matter what color you, no matter what class you are. So that's why I support them. And I belong to the group of regular people, not corporations, where my taxes might go up a little. But if it means that we have healthier children that are smarter, that are competing on a global scale to keep this country ahead, then it's worth it.
Well, let me play a little clip from the song, because many of these things are already reflected in your music as well. This is a little bit of the song Don't Die.
We now the dirty cops looking at me, talking about he killed if I try to flee. I'm about to lose it, so he gonna have to prove it. All because the government hate rap music. I've been labeled outlaw, renegade villain. So was Martin King, so the system had to kill him. A nigga with an attitude, the world gotta feel him. Educated villain, intent on living. If I gotta kill him.
I wonder if you think your political activism is a sort of one side of your life, and then there's the hip-hop side, or if the activism is an extension of the music.
First, you got great rhythm. I thought you bopped me.
I'm bopping along, yeah.
I told my mom I was going to be a rapper when I was 9 years old, and I have been organizing actively in Atlanta since I was 15 years old. I learned how to organize from Alice Johnson, Mr. Edward Johnson, no relation, and Mr. James Orange, who was a lieutenant with Dr. King, organized with the Teamsters and other labor unions here. So I was taught by actual organizers that marched with King. I was taught by actual organizers that hit the ground running. First thing we organized, 1991, 92, was a group of kids, a group of kids who were, at that time, gang members, vice lords, gangster disciples, Crips, to meet with martyr policemen and basically just get martyr police to stop beating kids. Because it got to the point where kids and martyr cops were going to be shooting it out in stations. You know, it had gotten that bad in the early 90s. So what you see in an Oscar Grant happen 20 years later, it had pretty much gotten that bad even in Atlanta that time, even though it wasn't being televised. So that was one of the first things. Next thing was Fulton County Commission partnered with my group, Kids for a Change. It was under the leadership of Lucy Vance and the late Jean Childs Young, who was the first wife of Andrew Young. They thought that if kids are going to be organized for, they should be organized with. We as a group of kids came in, organized, and allowed forums to happen where kids from Atlanta could tell what they thought in terms of improving the city were. So all I have been for over half my life is an organizer and a rapper. So I can't unlink them. My day job is rapping. I get to yell and scream and curse, and people pay me pretty good for that. But that allows me to, on the organizational side, to maintain my integrity and to simply stand behind the truth where I see it. You know, as long as I can keep jumping around and selling T-shirts, you know, for saying dirty words, then I'll be able to be a part of the political process in a fair and unbiased way because I have a decent day job.
Although, you haven't entirely, perhaps, gone the way of making the most money. I want to read this quote that you said in an interview. You said, "My name is Killer Mike, which makes it hard for me to get certain backing and endorsements from certain companies."
Yeah.
A band like The Killers, they get great press. They get great reviews. For some reason, a 6'3" black man being Killer Mike is a little more threatening than a bunch of 5'8" white guys known as The Killers.
Who I like. I actually happen to like that band. Yeah, I mean, that's the truth on some point. I'm now in a group called Run the Jewels, me and a guy named LP from Company Flow, and we just played Coachella 2 weeks back to back. You know, thousands and thousands of kids came out and raved to us. And if you hang in the race long enough, people will progress or they'll just get old and die off. So a lot of the older people that had opinions on me that were in the industry 10, you know, 12 years ago, thankfully their career, they have just died off. And these young kids that have grew up kind of with my music and seeing my struggle, they don't care that my name is Killer Mike. They know Michael Render. So, and I respect those kids for that because they ride really hard. And, you know, because of them now, you see, we have sponsorship, we have partnerships, and, you know, we're doing pretty good. You know, I'm not a rich man by any means, but I'm able to take good care of my wife and kids ultimately, and that's all any working class guy wants to do.
There has been some disagreements on social issues among the hip-hop community.
Absolutely.
I know
Absolutely.
There was a lot of pushback on Jay-Z during the Occupy Wall Street. He started selling T-shirts that said Occupy All Streets.
Yeah.
There's been pushback on other...
I think if he would have did those T-shirts for free, he wouldn't have gotten pushback. You
yeah.
know, if he would have just dropped off.
Because he was trying to make a profit?
Well, I don't think it's the fact that he was trying to make a profit. I think that when you grow up poor and when you have to grow up using your resources, you grow up doing that. You know, it's just like the lady who technically gets food stamps, but she buys a couple of extra packs of penny candy just so when the food stamps run out, she has a way of generating some income. So I think that the hip-hop spirit, and from a Jay-Z standpoint, and even mine, you think from an entrepreneurial standpoint because you've actually been poor. So I don't think that it was the wrong. I think it was a misinformed decision. I think he didn't have anyone around to say, Jay, you know, that selling it won't be the move, but if we give it away for kids to push their message, it might work. So I just think that was a slip up more than just a ignoring of the greater cause. You know, I think rappers want to get it. I think rappers want to get it, but I think that rappers don't have the responsibility of putting boots on the ground because I think that they have the responsibility of helping create a merchant class, and they have the responsibility of helping kids financially. And what I mean by that is, when LP and I did Meow the Jewels, we have a rec, essentially, it's the stupidest record you've ever heard. It's all of our original lyrics with cat sounds as the beats.
Right, meow,
and,
meow,
yeah. Meow, and we have some of the best producers in the world. Instead of doing our own album, we did a dumb cat album, right? So people are like, oh, man, you guys are going to get paid. Absolutely not. All the money that comes from the proceeds of Meow the Jewels goes directly to a charity that pays for lawyers to get protesters out of jail. So I can't come down out the clouds and be at every march, but what I can do is use my music to help influence the struggle in a greater way. So when Jay-Z and Beyonce gave money to Black Lives Matter, or when they do things like that, that's what rich people are supposed to do. That's what rich blacks did during the Civil Rights Movement.
I guess this hour is Killer Mike. The hip-hop artist and activist is also an entrepreneur. His Graffiti Swag Barbershop on Atlanta's South Side is one of the more popular places to get your haircut in the city. And Mike has been in the studio lately. It was a late night for you?
Yeah.
Which I appreciate getting up. This is early for a hip hop.
I didn't want to go to sleep. I just had to go home first.
To sleep at all?
Well, I slept for a couple. I wanted to just stay in the studio and just come straight here, but my wife didn't come to the studio with me. So you as a married man, you ain't going to hang out a couple extra hours here and say, I just went to radio. You're going to get your butt home report to the probation office.
Fair enough.
The boss, as my friends call her.
So you almost ran for office.
Yeah.
Kind of started to run for office.
Yeah. I just really wanted to make people aware that there was a race going on. You know, I'm going to tell people, politicians, you have nothing to worry about right now.
You're not going to run for office eventually?
Eventually, but eventually it's not going to happen in the next 2 years. You know, I'm having a successful rap career. Like, you get to, I got 4 children. These people need private school and college tuition, so I got to kind of keep rapping, but I'm definitely
going to... You got to make the Tubmans.
Exactly. Got to make... Oh, man, I'm so proud of that, too, and we'll talk about that. But, thank you, Harriet. Do you ever realize this country is often called an empire, an imperialistic colonizer? This country just put a black woman guerrilla warrior on a $20 bill for a man who was a slave owner and just a genocidal maniac to Native Americans. I think that is the most progressive thing to happen in the last 3 months at least.
Do you talk about this stuff with your kids?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. You never know how much they're taking in until they argue back with you. I remember when my daughter, who's now 18, was 13, and I was chastising her about dressing like Marilyn Monroe for... because that woman was cheap, and you know how you go into self-righteous debt. She was cheap when she slept with brothers, and you know all that typical bigotry that men have. And she looked me squarely in the eyes and said, "Oh, I should be Harriet Tubman or Shirley Chisholm." Oh, okay. Well, Pony is Jason. He's Jason, Dad. He's Jason. Pony Boy is Jason. You didn't look for black serial killers for him to be. I just looked down and told her, the dress is nice. And
for those who don't know that, that's the nickname of your son.
Yeah, Pony. I named Pony Boy after my favorite character in The Outsiders. As a kid, I loved that book. We're going to read it together this summer, too, me and him. And I want to say, too, I asked my daughter, I said, why did you pick Marilyn Monroe? And she enlightened me. She said, Dad, did you know she was the first, quote-unquote, full-figured woman to be essentially celebrated? And I hadn't thought, you know, in terms of a boy, if you're chubby, skinny, whatever, you're a boy. You can play a sport, people will like you. But I had never thought about the body, in terms of, well, little girl, you're trying to understand this body you're in. You're trying to find examples of that you like so you'll like yourself. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I didn't accredit her for being as brilliant as she is per our conversations over, you know, the years. And I lost that one. I took that L gladly. Like, my daughter's smart. She also showing cleavage. I don't know how that should feel about that, but, you know, she's a bright girl.
You know, Chuck D once described hip-hop as the CNN of the ghetto, I think is what he called it. Do you think that's still true? Because a lot of some of the top-selling albums are...
If that means has lost some of its grit, maybe. You know, I think that CNN was, you know, just a good word for just saying rap is the news of what's going on. You know, I'm doing a podcast that's going to be coming out on Huffington Post, and the podcast talks about Reconstruction right before Civil War. I mean, it talks about slavery right before Civil War and Reconstruction. And you often think, you know, that somehow things are in our community or just here, or they just happened. But it's kind of been this way. So, you know, I think that there isn't one narrative. You know, there are many narratives. I've learned a lot, you know, just kind of bouncing around. But, you know, I don't know. I'm just kind of living through it.
But some of the people in your business have said they've been swayed by your passion for Bernie Sanders. And I want to read another thing that you said not long after Michael Brown's death, which seems to have hit you really hard.
It did.
You said, "I'm appalled that regular Americans are apathetic. I'm appalled at everyday citizens. When will we, as an American constituency, tell our politicians enough is enough?"
Yeah.
I'm sure you don't mean all Americans are apathetic, but do you see yourself as sort of an evangelist in terms of trying to get people into politics?
I don't. My wife does. You know, she says it. I don't. I'm very frank in that. Luther Campbell, Uncle Luke, and Larry Flint has been as influential to me, you know, in my political shaping as Martin and Malcolm or any other body I've looked up to. You know, I am about freedom. So we're only going to be here a few short years, you know, and I think that it is absolutely deplorable that in the few years we're here, 70, 80, 90, 100, if we're lucky, that we have to accept poverty, that we have to accept homelessness, that we have to accept mental illness, that we have to accept subpar education. We shouldn't accept these things. We shouldn't accept them for ourselves. And if we don't accept them for ourselves, we should feel that they're not worthy of other human beings. Every human being deserves to go through this magical existence called life in a way that's unbothered, in a way that they're unchained to debt and hurt and harm. So, you know, I've just decided that in my life, whatever I can do to progress into a more humane place is what I want to do. Am I an evangelist in some way, I guess I am, because I know that you being active in local politics changes things. I know that. I don't believe that. It's not something I heard in theory. It's not, you know, I'm not a celebrity that woke up to this epiphany 2 days ago. No, I've seen it in Atlanta. I've seen in my lifetime what an active political constituency can do to shape and move government. You know, and I think that as Americans, if we paid more attention, not to ourselves and our needs based on ego, but to ourselves and our needs based on our community and what will make our community better, I think we get more active locally. And if you get more active locally, you're going to be more active statewide. And if you're more active statewide, it's going to take your thinking up to nationally, you know? So I would like to see all of us be more active on a local level. And the real truth of it is, after this presidential election, I got a mayor's election coming up in Atlanta. We got state reps coming up a couple years after that. So my thing is, I'm going to be active for the next few years in terms of, I want to see my community shaped in a way that I think Maynard Jackson would have liked. I want to see my community shaped in a way that I think working class people of Atlanta have a shot. We have one of the largest wealth disparities in the country in this city.
I think number one.
Yeah, I've heard number one. I didn't want to throw us on the track. But yeah, we're number one. We're number one. Like, think about that. Atlanta's one of the best, safest, easiest places for black people to even progress. When you start looking at Detroit and Compton and even Harlem now, it's one of the best places. And with that, the income disparity is still number one in the nation. We got a lot of waking up to do. We got a lot of, you know, we got a lot of moving to do here.
But it's, you know, they always say that the more money you get, the more conservative you become.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yes.
That hasn't been true for me.
But it is true for other entertainers, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who go from rags to riches and then want to keep those riches.
Yeah. I mean, you can keep your riches. You know, you can keep your riches. I mean, there's ways to be rich. I mean, I have friends that are Canadian that are millionaires. I have friends that are citizens of the UK that are millionaires before me. So I'm just like, it's possible, but it isn't. You know, I watched the TED Talks. I forgot who it was, but this young man speaking, he's a 100 millionaire or billionaire. He said, you know, that our idol worship of the rich has put us in a place where we're defending people who don't have a concern for us. If you make sure a 100 millionaire can keep his $100 million, he's going to buy one house. He's going to have a couple cars. His kids are going to go to a better school. If you take that 100 millionaire, if he is taxed, say 25%, 25 of those $1 million are now back in the circulation of this country, back in the jobs creation, back into some type of workforce. That $25 million becomes salary for more than 25 million people. That salary has those people who are now working in the middle class buying things. The things they buy come from stores. Those stores have to hire people. The people who work in those stores take their money, they buy things. So you only grow an economy when you're paying the people that are quote unquote on the bottom. You're not growing an economy by by paying or letting people on the top keep everything. And I'm not saying take from people. I'm simply saying that if we keep ignoring that there is a growing underclass in this country, eventually something's going to happen and not good.
But, you know, people are expecting the African-American turnout, which was at a record high because during Obama's runs for office, to drop significantly.
Yeah.
And part of that is because it's African Americans often report they feel the political system is rigged and that their vote doesn't really count.
Yeah.
How do you answer that? Because what you're talking about, that apathy, seems to be on both sides of the aisle. It's either angry or apathetic.
Yeah, I remember when the Republicans were putting $2 million out to investigating the African American vote. And I remember reaching out to Rafi Williams and just saying, Rafi, it's Juan Williams' son, just saying, if you want that African American vote, you should take that $2 million, you should put together a barbershop campaign. And you should go to barbershops and you should target African American men. I was like, you're not going to get African American women. I'm going to be very frank with you. I'm not saying you're not going to get any of them, but 40 to 60 year old, you're probably not going to do. And Hillary's numbers are showing you that's true. 18 to 36, you stand a chance at. So I would target people in that culture. Why? African-American men are disenfranchised, most likely to not be able to get a job. Republicans talk about entrepreneurship. They talk about limited government. African-American men are involved in government in ways they don't like to be. The libertarian stance, if it didn't hold such racism by the people who are leading it, black men would flock to the libertarian stance if they didn't have... If it wasn't associated with overt racism. It'd be like having puppy chow in a room full of puppies because it makes sense. You know, hold on, free speech, yep. Own gun, yep. I could have the ability to have my own business without government, yep. But none of the people who could appeal to them are, because they're propped up by racism. They're propped up by wanting to keep the order the way it is. They're propped up by weird Christian values. They're just propped up by things that don't allow them to fully engage an audience that's sitting there waiting. The Democrats have not done a very good job at keeping black men involved, and I think that's purposeful, to be very honest with you. So for me, in terms of the people that are disenfranchised for apathy or anger, we need you a part of the process even more than the people who are in it, because the people who are in it is already working for it. They already got their mortgages. They already got whatever. You know, I need angry and the apathetic people to kind of rise up off the bench and say, we want to have a say, too.
Okay, so we've got about 40 seconds left, and we talked earlier about how you want to continue working with Bernie Sanders, but will you leave the president part blank on the ballot if Bernie Sanders is not the nominee?
No, I'm not saying I'm going to do that. I'm saying I'm seriously going to call him and say, what do we do now? I mean, and that's, you know, and it sounds cute and it sounds like, but it's not a joke. Like, I have accepted your challenge to be a part of a political revolution, and that revolution will continue whether you're president or not, because what you've done is waking up Americans to a new way of thinking. The greatest part about this republic, as I learned as a kid, is that we have the ability to transform it at any time. That's what constitutional amendments have been about. So when you say, we can't have one payer system, why can't we? We can do whatever we decide to. We couldn't go to the moon until we decided to. So for me, I think as a country, when we make the decision that this revolution will go on, it will go on. So I'm with Sanders all the way.
Killer Mike, hip-hop Grammy Award-winning artist, activist, as you heard. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Celeste.